pressing play on more classic hits. Ireland's classic hits. The classic hits you love from the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Yeah.
of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted. A silent prayer for 50 parted. In the crowd, you're gonna hear my voice when I shout it out loud. It's my
the best of nighttime talk with Niall Boylan. Please don't text or call, as you will be charged.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
It is Niall Boylan with you right through to midnight tonight. A bit of a clue as to who our guest is a bit later. He's known as the Hidden Man. And I'm going to give you a clue, okay? I'm going to do my best singing here, okay? Did you get that? Anyway, all will be revealed a bit later on. Also, we got an email from a guy who's not too happy because he's getting married in 3 months and now realised that his wife doesn't want to take his name. She wants to keep her single name. He's terrified now because what will his mother and father think? And also, he's a traditionalist. He doesn't want the kids having double barrel names. This is causing a problem. Should he call the whole thing off? After all, she's not playing ball with him, is she? It's a bit old school, isn't it? Anyway, it's true. some people are very weird like that. You know what I mean? They kind of insist on it. Anyway, I want to know what you think of that later on. But first, yeah, I don't know why you're watching the debate last night, by the way. Kamala and... you're not allowed to say Kamala, by the way. Did you know that? Bet you didn't know that. If you say Kamala, seemingly it's racist. I have no idea why, but allegedly I was in Fox News, I was watching an interview one day, and some governor said that anybody who says Kamala is racist. So her name is Kamala. Okay. Anyway, Kamala, or Kamala, whatever you call it, was on obviously the debate. I stayed up, I'm bleary-eyed tonight because I stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning watching the debate. According to some of the pollsters, Kamala won. But yeah, I don't know. Trump wasn't on form, that's for sure. She was just word vomiting for the whole thing and had this weird look on her face that she kept staring at him. He never looked at her once, by the way. He messed up a little bit by talking about the old story of the, you know, the Haitians eating the dogs in the middle of Springfield. Now, there was a story seemingly in the paper of some Haitian that had been arrested because they robbed somebody's pet and cooked it. But I don't think it was presidential debate material, but he brought it up anyway, which kind of made him sound a bit bonkers. But in saying that, they fact checked and said it was wrong. And in fact, it was correct. Seemingly, he was she had 21 incorrect facts, but they never fact-checked her once. He had two, and they fact-checked him twice. So clearly, like, the usual bias happens on media in America when it comes to Trump. But anyway, I would have put it down as 50-50, put him slightly ahead, because she didn't really answer any questions. She just kind of kept speaking all the time. So I actually did think he did okay. But look, all will be revealed. The elections will be coming up soon. We'll get somebody on maybe during the week to talk about that particular debate and how it went. It depends on which poll you look at, by the way. Some polls say he won it, some polls say she won it. Unsurprisingly, by the way, given the weather has been absolutely rotten, let's face it, it's been shite all summer. Tourism is down in Ireland. Fall to Ireland shows a decline across all tourist markets in the country. Fewer visitors and higher costs. Do you remember when we were being encouraged to have a staycation after COVID? And nowhere was actually equipped to deal with the weather or the restrictions, leaving you sat 2 metres away from your betrothed one getting lashed on under a drain or some, you know, getting your arse soggy and your head not even covered and the incessant drip from a parasol anyway, at your backside. And then within a couple of years, the prices of everything started skyrocketing. I mean, you would genuinely consider taking a staycation of any kind around Ireland now, would you really? I mean, it's probably as cheap to go to Portugal as it is to go to Killarney. And I'll tell you why Killarney in a minute. Even our capital city has been outpriced out of it, from what I believe. Are we hoping to attract only a certain type of tourist now? You know, one, I suppose, dripping in celebrity, influence or wealth with the posed photograph undrank of the pint of Guinness just for a day so they can, you know, say they were in Ireland. Well, the tourism side of things got a little bit of a boost when the American football was in town. Poor old Paddy and Mary couldn't afford to stay up in the big smoke on All-Ireland Day because basically they had a 5-hour round trip to Salt Hill if that's what they wanted to do because they couldn't afford to stay in Dublin. Visitor volumes are down and prices are up. Wouldn't you think that if, I suppose, you dropped the prices, maybe the numbers coming here might actually increase? But then again, that'd be too obvious. Well, do you think Ireland is still as attractive as it used to be, as a good tourist destination for holidaymakers? All those generations of Americans coming to discover the old country and their younger generation can't even afford to visit it, perhaps, now. Or maybe they're not even interested, I don't know. And whenever we've talked about in the world's media, usually, of late, it's usually over a violent protest, a riot, or sadly a stabbing, or a tourist getting beaten up. I mean, there was an article in the paper saying at one stage our nighttime industry was one of the most dangerous in Europe. I mean, we were in the top 10 somewhere. That's not good for Irish tourism, is it? So maybe we should turn our attention away from tourism and focus on the other thing we're good at. What is the other thing we're good at, Connor? Is there another thing we're good at? Singing and dancing, I suppose. Anyway, other than supposedly being welcoming, what do we do? I mean, how do we encourage people to come to Ireland? Would you staycation in Ireland, or would you rather just piss off to Spain or Portugal or something like that? Would you actually staycation in Ireland? Would you head down to Kerry or Cork or across to Galway or Sligo if you're from Dublin, or vice versa? If you're from Cork, Limerick, Galway, would you head over to Dublin to the big smoke for the day? Or is it just too bloody expensive? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. Why do you think people don't want to come to Ireland anymore and tourism is down? One man who knows a lot about tourism because he's in the industry, right in the thick of it, actually, Paul Trevoux, celebrity chef from Trevoux's Restaurant in Killarney, and he joins me. Paul, hi, how are you?
Niall, good evening, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Well, it looks like it's not going to get any better, Paul. You know what I mean? You were right all along. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? They hate to say it too. I mean, and I was laughing at the False Ireland report that came out. They mentioned every excuse under the sun bar the elephant in the room.
So what were the excuses they mentioned? Well, pricing is obviously a major excuse. The weather is a good excuse too, isn't it?
Well, let's give the excuse and then let's bring a bit of logic and reality into it, which government and government bodies hate. So the weather is an issue, but I can tell you now, when people are booking 12 months out, the last thing they're concerned about in Ireland is the weather. And in fact, a lot of Americans come here because of the weather, because they've got excruciating heat all over on the west coast.
So they don't mind a bit of rain. Yeah.
They don't mind the rain. They quite enjoy it. They enjoy the cool temperatures. That's fine. So weather for the American tourists and a lot of our continental tourists is never going to be an issue, because they know Ireland is notorious for a look. You could get literally the four seasons in one day, as they say. So weather is not an issue. They talk about the costs. Well, let's ask ourselves as to why the costs have gone the way they've gone. Well, I laugh at all these people saying, those bloody restaurants are robbing you blind. I've never seen anybody who says that open a restaurant. Trust me, if there's so much money to be made in it, by all means, go ahead and do it.
Okay, but give me an idea, Paul. I mean, when I say give me an idea, in your restaurant, and I don't want to put yourself out of business here, right? But say, you know, the price of a steak dinner now versus the price of a steak dinner, you know, on a three course, you know, starter, dinner, and, you know, dessert and a cup of tea. The price now versus the price 2019, what percentage are you up?
So we're 20% higher. And I can tell you now, when I was 20% cheaper, I was making more money. And that is an absolute fact. And that's, so you'll hear the Restaurant Association harp on always about VAT. I personally think they're wrong. I mean, they'll obviously disagree with me, but I personally think the VAT is the last of the things that we need to be worried about. Our costs have gone through the roof. Everyone is scared stiff to say the main reason or the main cost that's gone through the roof is the wage cost. Along with wage cost, they've got a minimum wage, and you'll hear it like, you don't want to pay your staff the minimum wage. You know, it's got nothing to do with that. I'll pay my staff 50 quid an hour, but you're going to pay 100 quid for a breast of chicken. That's how it works, because you simply can't absorb these insane that were enforced by the government to increase. So the problem is not just the minimum wage guy, because the guy, I'm just saying for argument's sake, they're not exact figures, but just so everyone understands what I'm saying. If it went from 10 euro to 12 euro, the guy who was on 12 euro wants 14. The guy who was on 14 wants 16, 18, so on and so forth. So everybody's wages have gone through the roof. But what comes with that is an employer's RSI increase, which is absolutely killing the small business person now at the moment. So that is the huge wage cost that has really gone through the roof for the majority of restaurants and anyone in hospitality retail. We're all experiencing the exact same thing. I just say the restaurant industry is
so
quite
close. What you're telling me is you have to then pass that on to the customer, obviously.
Absolutely, because it's as simple as this. Let's just say we all know, right, for very simply, that if interest rates go up by 0.5%, well, do you think the banks absorb that? They do in their ass. They all of a sudden straight away increase your mortgage rates, right? So it's the exact same principle of that. If my wage cost goes up 10, 15, 20%, then I obviously have to recoup that somehow. And unfortunately, it's the guy who's coming in off the high street who's having the breast of chicken or having a steak that's going to be stuck with that bill.
Okay. Then you've also got your energy bills, your insurance costs.
Yeah, energy bills. Now, energy has come down marginally, but it's still probably about 20, 25% higher than where it was.
Well, it's still the most expensive energy bill in Europe.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy money. So just to put into context, for kind of like for a small restaurant like myself, which is about 70, 80 seats, we're paying, in the peak season, we're paying about $2,500 is what it's costing us a month. And I have it down at a great rate compared to others. The other guy's going, how the hell has he got it so cheap? But we are literally, it's insane. You walk in and I'd be shooting the lads. If the oven is on when there's nobody, you know, if we don't need it, if the fat fryer's on, if we don't need it, why? Like I have it, I watch it like a bloody hawk. So $2,500, even though it's a huge amount of money, it's quite small compared to a lot of other places. The rates, for example, particularly in like somewhere like Kenmare, that where I'm living myself, the rates have more than doubled for small businesses. Now, what does that mean? That means it's probably gone from 5,000 to a small building to now about 12. Some of them have even gone up to 18,000 euro. So that's an extra 10, 12, 15,000 euro that now all of a sudden the small business guy has to find from somewhere, and that's after all the other increases and all the other costs.
And I know you said it wasn't important, but the VAT increase as well hasn't helped. It's another nail in the coffin, isn't it?
No, 100%. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if the VAT was to drop, would I be delighted? Of course. But I don't think that's the number.
Yeah, it's not the solution. Yeah. Okay. But people are going to give out and say, you miserable shit, would you not pay your staff well? But I understand the point. It is what it is. That's the job. That's, you know, and that's the occupation, right?
But here's what people have to understand now, right? This is why our government are as useless as they are. For argument's sake, let's just say the minimum wage was 450 euro a week before the increase went up. Let's just say that, right? They were paying, again, these are just figures so that people understand. They were paying 50 euro of that was going on employees, RSI, USD, all the kind of charges, right? So in order for that employee to get more money, the government forced the employer to increase it by 50 euro. As opposed to the government turning around saying, well, how about we remove them from the tax loop altogether? So instead of giving them 450 and we take 50 off them, how about we take nothing off them? And now all of a sudden the employee is 50 quid better off. And the pressure has not been put on the employer to increase it. But guess why they won't do that?
Yeah, because they lose money.
That costs the government money. Yeah. So it's very easy for them to turn around and enforce small businesses to turn. Could you imagine them walking into Dell, Microsoft and go, listen, lads, do you know the 50 grand you're paying the lads? You have to put that up to 70. How far do you think they'd get away with that? But they go after the small individual businesses because we just bend them.
Yeah, but I do feel sorry for people who are on, you know, $12.50 an hour because
100%. But that's why it's very important that you get my point. Yeah. My point is not that they don't deserve more. My point is that the government could have absorbed the hit as opposed to the small businesses. And the reason why they don't do that is because now I increase my prices. Now they get more VAT, so it's an actual tax. And the employee who was supposed to be benefiting is actually costing them more due to inflation. So that extra 25 euro that employee gets a week is now actually costing him 40 to survive. So it's an absolute excuse.
Okay, so the whole thing basically has changed. So the stake on the plate is now 20 instead of 16. So, I get that. So here's, and then there's the other elephant in the room, isn't there? There's a massive elephant in the room. When it comes to small villages and small towns, little holiday towns all over the country, you know, the local hotel is now no longer really a local hotel anymore. It's a centre, an accommodation centre. That's a huge problem for the...
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, Niall, right? Because people, look, you know me well enough and long enough now. For the last 2 years, I'm called every name under the sun from racist, bigot, fascist...
That's because you're right. You are all those things, Paul.
Don't say that out loud. Okay, that's sarcasm jokes. We're living in a different world from when I grew up. That was humor, people who are listening, right?
Yeah,
reality is that if we did like Poland, if we did like Switzerland, I know we don't have them, but if we stuck them in the nuclear bunkers in the mountains, which is what the Swiss have done, if we did like the Poles and put them into old army barracks and police barracks and all that kind of stuff, I would not be on the radio because nobody has an issue with anybody that's leaving the war, that's fleeing the country, that's in trouble and persecution. Nobody has an issue of minding people. But when the government, who were so lazy, so naive and so stupid, turned around and said, whack them all straight in, because in Ireland, we've got so many seasonal towns. So if I had, and I'm not going to be hypocritical, if I had a 200-bedroom hotel in Killarney, which normally dies a death from, say, November till March, and the government offers me 100% occupancy at an unbelievable rate.
Oh, yeah. Twice as much as you'd normally get for it. Yeah, I know. I know a big hotel is taking in people, and they're making 100% massive amounts of money.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the problem.
Okay, so here's the thing, Paul. The problem is now that Paddy and Mary, rather than going to Killarney for a week, are heading off to Portugal because it's cheaper. Actually, it's cheaper to go to Portugal for a week than it is to go to Killarney for the weekend, probably.
100%.
100%. So you can't kind of blame them.
No, I do it myself. I'm not going to preach to people and say you got to come to Killarney over Portugal because it's dead right. Now, however, when you analyze the pricing that's going on in restaurants in Portugal, they're every bit as, especially when you go to somewhere like Villamore. I know when you go away from the major tourist spots that are in Portugal, it's an awful lot cheaper. But if you go to the main spots and pick in Villamore, for example, down around the marina, they're actually much more expensive than we are here in Ireland. And they've got a far cheaper and a far lower cost base.
Mm.
So now go 5 miles away from Villamore and it's obviously 15, 20% cheaper. And you're getting a beer for 150 or 2 euro. But again, we got to understand that's the guy. Ah, you're ripping us off. You're screwing us blind. The minimum wage is far less.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Got an opinion?
Hello.
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Hi, it's Niall Boylan. Weeknights from 9, I open the phone lines for your opinions. Honest, upfront and unfiltered.
The stupidity of our so-called politicians, they don't have a clue how to run money.
And you broke the law.
But I never said that I didn't break the law. Niall, we all know what I'm talking about.
The Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Monday to Thursday, 9pm to midnight with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Well, Niall, listen to me.
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm listening to you now, honestly.
In the hospitality industry, in the pubs, the Irish pub was infamous. Tourists came and they went to the Irish pub. They wanted that experience.
It came in about you.
Smoke.
Dilly idle.
And then the next thing, Micheál Martin said, we're bringing in the smoking ban.
Yeah, but there was nothing wrong with the smoking ban. They brought the smoking ban in every country in Europe. It wasn't just Micheál Martin.
But
he just happened to be Minister for Health at the time.
He told people at the time that, he told publicans and restaurants.
Stop going back in time, Anthony.
Ventilation system.
Yeah, Anthony, you're going to, Jesus, Anthony. Let's not visit the past.
He would smoke outside.
It was 20 years ago, Anthony.
Here we are now 20 years later and you can't even smoke outside now.
Well, they haven't brought that in yet, by the way. We just happened to mention it on the radio, then brought it in. But okay, as you heard Farron saying, Ireland is epic. You know, she loves Ireland. She thinks it's a beautiful country. Is it still, do you believe Ireland is still as attractive to tourists as it used to be? Forget about Micheál Martin and the politics and the government and everything else.
Not anymore, no. It's become too...
To what?
Strictly, and it's become too European. I have friends from other countries, and they said to me, well, you're a European. I said, I'm not a European, I'm Irish.
Farron, can I say something to you, right? And I'm going to say this.
Ireland, EU.
Anthony's still talking. Sorry. Can I say something to you both? And I want to say something, Farron, in particular to you, because you were talking really good. I was talking about Ireland becoming too cosmopolitan, right? And I don't want this to sound racist, because no matter what way I say it, it's going to... No matter what way I say this, it's going to sound racist, right? But it's genuine. So I'm out on the campaign trail for the European elections, going back, whatever it was, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, right? And we were in town, myself and a few volunteers handed out leaflets, right? We said, we'll go into town, we'll just hand them out around Henry Street. So I said to the volunteers, listen... Because we were obviously limited by cost. We had a limited amount of leaflets. I said, you know, don't just hand them to everybody. There's no point in handing them to some tourist because there's no point. They're not going to vote, right? So I said, you know, make sure you just hand them to Irish people. You know what I mean? Because they're the ones voting, obviously, right? And I walked down Henry Street. Do you think I could find an Irish person? Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Diversity is wonderful and everything else. But the point I'm making from an optics point of view for a tourist coming here,
okay,
expecting to see diddly idle, look at the Irish, they're not seeing that optically anymore. Now, I would hate to think the people get the wrong impression of what I'm trying to say here, because I do welcome diversity and, you know, people come to this country and work in this country from all over the world. But I just, I visually still, as a tourist, would like to see Ireland and Irish people. If I go to Cardiff, I want to see Welsh people walking around. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but in the UK, you will see a very diverse mix. But if I could just counter
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. It's kind of gone like London.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But can I just counter that? You were saying that was when you was on Henry Street, right? That is a very large city where it would be more diverse. However, if you were around my area, it's quite the opposite.
Absolutely. But
it's quite the opposite. So it does depend on where you're going and the fact that right now, personally, where I find where I'm living and where my children go to school, it is very much that there are the people who've been there for generations upon generations, what I call the local royalty, whereas that there is that social politics, and they rule the roost, and you don't go against them.
Yeah.
And there is the majority of those people, it is, well, I've been here, I built my house on my mother's land, which was my grandfather's land, which was my great-grandfather's land, and we've been here for generations, and we know absolutely bloody everybody, and we're coaching the GAA, and you are who you to say no to us.
Well, listen, I have to go to a break. Just before I go, thank you for that, Farron. Just before I go to the break, we did a quick poll on Instagram. We asked, do you feel safe in Dublin City? And 94%, was it? 94% of people said, no, they don't. 96% said they don't. And only 4% said they did. That's not good. That's not good for tourism. I have to say, Fern, I've never seen so many compliments over an accent in my life, by the way. Can I just point? You should be getting very embarrassed at this stage, by the way. Although somebody did say, well, if Fern didn't want that all-Irish experience of living in the west of Ireland, she should have moved to Dublin or stayed in Wales. Is she, it's like she has a chip on her shoulder for moving somewhere else that isn't what she wants it to be. Madness. I don't think it was Fern actually said that, to be honest with you. Anyway, let me go to Tony. Yeah, no, I don't know what he's talking about. Tony, hi, how are you?
I'm good. I disagree with you about being ripped off in Ireland as regards the Americans or the tourists coming in. I drive a tour bus, I'm a tour guide, and have been doing this for 20 years, 25 years.
Yeah.
And they all have great experience and all love it. They absolutely love this country. Like, you have people getting off the bus crying when they're going back. I asked them how did they enjoy the holiday, any problems, any quims or qualms. They never. The weather doesn't mean anything to them.
Well, I know. We ruled out the weather. The people know what Ireland is like when it comes to weather. So I ruled that out. But then, Tony, why is it that the latest report from Fáilte Ireland says tourism is down?
Yeah, tourism is down. We know that. We know that ourselves on the buses. It was.
Why do you think it's down?
The usual thing. It's an election year in America. They don't travel. I don't think that has a lot to do with it. I do agree about the hotels, the lack of hotels. You just take Listenvarna, for example. We were always in and out of Listenvarna, and there's no place to stay in this. I think there's down to two small little hotels. All the big hotels are all full of
refugees.
Immigrants.
Yeah.
Refugees, yeah.
Okay, so I think it's 40%, I think somebody mentioned to me a while ago, could be wrong with that figure, that there's 40% of accommodation is used up now, you know, for people, IPAS or people who are here as refugees. I mean, that's not good for tourism. So that gives the rest of the other 60% the opportunity to raise their prices, supply and demand.
Yeah, to raise their prices. Yeah, you're right. You're right on that. But there's still, most of the people, I have actually people on my bus tonight. They're staying in the Camden Court. I'll give you an example of their evening. They're staying in the Camden Court. They're going to Cafe Insane. They're back up to the Camden Court. Tomorrow it's Wicklow. And absolutely love it. And it doesn't seem to be a problem. Most of the Americans that come here, most of them can afford it. It's like everything else. You just go where you can afford. And most of the Americans that come here can afford. They spend big money in the likes of shops. They're not great drinkers. Now, offhand, they're not a great drinker. They eat a lot and they spend money. Like, I was with people that have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 euros in Waterford Crystal. That's no problem. Like, I don't think an extra room is nice.
But I've noticed, even as a local, so to speak, be it in Dublin, or if I head outside Dublin to Kildare, or if I'm going down to Cork, for example, or Galway, you know, for listener parties or whatever it is, or in going out, like, everything has got more expensive. Even driving to these destinations, because you're paying €2 for diesel, which I'm sure you're seeing that increase in cost as well, Tony, driving the bus.
Yeah.
You know, so we're all seeing the increase in cost, which has to be passed on to the tourists. The tourists might be having a good time and enjoying themselves, but they're going back to America and telling their mates how much it costs. You know what I mean? And that's not good, is it? Dublin, we know that Dublin now has a reputation for not being as safe as it used to be. That'd be a fair point to make, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I agree there. There needs to be something done on that line. But another thing, you know, there's a great receipt from Temple Bar that floats around on Facebook now and again, and this drink, that drink, and the whole bill for 4 drinks or 5 drinks come to 40 or 50 euros. And that floats around. But you go into the equivalent place in London, go into in Paris, go into in Tokyo or any other country, or go to St. Marcus Square in Venice and have a coffee and see how much it costs there.
Oh, no, it's a rip-off. By the way, I was in Venice many, many years ago. And the one thing I always thought, you know, that Venice seems like a nice place to go. I hated it. Hated every minute of it.
Yeah.
Should they charge you just for sitting down on a seat?
Yeah. They're charging €5 to go into the city now.
Well, I went into a restaurant cafe, and they had this kind of strawberry and cream thing. So I said, that looks nice. I'll have a bit of that. It was like £7, right? £8. and, you know, a glass of water, whatever, right? And the girl says to me behind the counter, are you going to be sitting down? Now, the place was empty. There was about 10 seats in it, or 10 tables in it. And it was empty, middle of the day. And I says, yeah, I might sit down. Why? That'll be an extra €5. I said, what, for sitting down? And then I noticed there was two people at the back standing up with their plates in their hands and their cup of tea because they didn't want to sit down and pay the extra €5. I swear, I couldn't believe it. Sorry, let me just go to Mickey. Mickey, hi. Thank you, Tony. Mickey.
How's things?
Yeah, from Guidor.
From Guidor. I was waiting for you to sing it first. Well, sure.
No, I'm going to sing out about Guidor. Mickey, your argument is there's nowhere.
You're so fine.
Oh, yes. Anyway. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blow my mind. Hey, Mickey.
That's what I was waiting for. Yeah. Now I'm happy now.
You passed it.
No, look, this is what I look back and I know a few business owners around here in Guidor. And well, you always ask, cooking, I'll chat to one of the chefs or whatever, and we'd be saying, well, how was the summer, et cetera, et cetera. And, well, food, and that was great. And then when you talk to the owners, it was all, most of the tourists that came there were saying they were being extorted out of money because you couldn't get a hotel. There used to be 5 hotels here in Guidor, 5 of them. And there's only 2 that are still open. One of which is, I think there's immigrants in it. But it was 2 massive hotels and were big, massive ones. And I don't know if you remember a couple of years back, Pierce Doherty.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's our local man here for Sinn Féin. And he was out boasting outside this beautiful hotel. Sea View hasn't been opened in years. And the other one down right on the beach. And we're going to renovate all this. To push through when the Ukrainian war came, the Sea View one, they got it all done up and they put all refugees in it. Just up the road then, they built this Fairy Glen Village, it's called, and they built a lot of, like, you know, glamping huts.
Yeah.
And they've extended it. And just before they opened it, 1 week before they opened it, they said it's not going to be open to the public. It's going to be for Ukrainian refugees. And,
oh, God.
3 or 4 years.
And
later,
I mean, God love them. I know they have to have somewhere to live, and I understand that. But you can't destroy tourism for the sake of all this. It's killing us.
Well, they have. Well,
you're saying to me, there's nowhere to go, is what you're saying to me in Guidor, or up around Donegal.
Well, and it's basically.
But Donegal's a beautiful place.
Everyone has gone to, well, in Guidor. Like there's a biggest majority in Guidor are holiday homes, and a lot from the north. I'm in a little kind of a cul-de-sac. There's 6 houses, and they're big houses. And in one beside me, they're from Monaghan at the holiday home, an elderly couple. The next one is a Polish couple. They've been here for a long time. Their kids go to school, my kids, and it's an all-Irish speaking school. Beside that is an Amish American couple, 2 guys who moved here a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other houses, they're all people from the north, but they've Airbnb it while they're away, and they get about £200 a night. While they're away, so whether they have a mortgage out in that place,
yep.
Their Airbnb and the price of Airbnb are going up like crazy.
Yep.
And as I'm saying, the business owners around here that I know of have been saying, everyone that's came, they're like, yeah, it's grand, but we can only stay a night. We used to come here for a week. We can't afford to stay here for a week anymore. And I noticed the price, because I go out every so often with the missus or whatever, and I notice in the restaurants and at the bars that do serve food and that, every couple of weeks you notice the fish and chips have gone up by €1 here or there, and you say, geez, you're putting that up, right? After, man, the cost of everything is going nuts and not enough tourists coming in.
So again, you're putting it down to cost, the cost factor. Mickey, unfortunately I've run out of time there and I have to go into the news, but I think we're getting a general trend across the whole show that it's a cost factor, which is led by many things, including just the cost of everything. So the cost is being passed on by the hospitality industry, the cost of energy, the cost of insurance, the cost of rates, the extra VAT rate, etc., etc. And on top of that, the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems, seems to be the accommodation. That the accommodation is charging more because they can, because there's less of it, because most of the accommodation, or a lot of the accommodation, is being used for refugees. So the rest of the accommodation then that's available can charge that bit more because of supply and demand. A lot of people are saying by text here, Niall, you are right. We recently thought we were going to go on a staycation. We were thinking about going around Ireland. We contacted 1 or 2 hotels in Galway and Cork to see what the pricing was like, but ended up going, as you rightly said, for a week in Portugal. It turned out to be a lot cheaper, actually not just a lot cheaper, but nearly half the price. See, How can you compete with that? And you know, go to Portugal, you're guaranteed the sunshine. And it is a beautiful place. And you'll buy your beer cheaper at night, and your cigarettes cheaper, and your food cheaper, and everything else cheaper. It's hard to compete with, isn't it? I know Ireland is beautiful. I don't want to slag Ireland off. It's a lovely country. But, you know, we got to get our shit together. We got to get our prices down. We got to encourage people to come to the country. And we got to deal with this crisis that we have that's basically destroying our industry, our tourist industry. It is. Sorry. Roderick O'Gorman, you need to get a handle on this. By the way, it would be obviously very remiss of me not to mention the anniversary of 9/11 2001, where over 2,900 people lost their lives, 2,977 to be exact. I always remember that day, and I think everybody remembers where they were. Those of us who are of the age will remember where you were that day when it happened. And I remember looking in a shop window, and it was actually on the TVs. They were selling televisions. I remember watching it. And it was like a trailer for a Hollywood movie, watching these planes flying into a building. Unbelievable to watch. And we think about it now, how, and in fairness, you know, you got to give it, and you've got to hand it to the people of New York, how they came back from something so tragic and terrifying so quickly. And they did. And they have another skyscraper, the One World Center, now in its place. In a very short space of time. Most countries would have taken a long time to recover from something like that, but it was get back up, dust yourself off, and let's do this. You know, and fair play to the people from New York and the Americans. Anyway, we do remember them on this day, of course, on the anniversary of 9/11.
Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
With Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
You know what, I'm just listening to Pat O'Tobin there from A2 on the news. He's one of the most logical people I ever heard. Obviously, you know, A2 are a very small party within government, within the Dáil, should I say. Maybe they'll become bigger. Maybe they'll be a very logical party for some people to vote for. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it might not be your cup of tea. But what he said was right. There was an open day recently in Dublin in a hotel, as far as I know, where the Australian recruiters for the Australian police came over to invite Irish men and women to join the Australian police. And they were offering more money than the Garda Síochána. So why wouldn't you do it? New life, sunshine, you know, different lifestyle, better money. Why wouldn't you do it? You know what I mean? Realistically. And a gun, as Connor just said in my ear. Yeah, and a gun. You know, so why wouldn't you do it? You know what I mean? It'd feel probably safer. I don't know. I just think it's like our doctors, as Pat rightly said, Pat Tobin, our nurses, all our professionals, you know. And by the way, it touches on another subject, right, that I talked about a while ago, this idea of free education. You know, and I know I kind of sound mean now because I'm talking about the same thing, but if we're using taxpayers' money to train, be it doctors, nurses, Garda Síochána, or whatever it is, and we're using taxpayers' money, because remember, it's all subsidised. As much as, you know, for example, to do courses or whatever it is in colleges, $3,000, although you do get paid a small amount of money when you're training as a nurse or a doctor, it's only a small amount of money. It does seem quite abusive, actually, the amount of money they give them. But in saying that, it's a small amount of money. It is subsidised. Any other country in the world, you would have to pay a lot more than that. And if they're not going to use that service in this country, provided this country is running properly, because I don't want to sound mean, because I don't blame nurses, doctors, guards, and everybody else leaving the country, because you can't afford to live in this country anymore. I mean, even just to buy a house now in a city in this country is disgraceful, right? You just couldn't do it. So if we get things back in order again in the future, I think people should be penalised for leaving the country. In other words, you have to pay for the education that you received if you're going to use it in another country. You know, particularly, say, in the first 5 years. That's something we could talk about in the future, not right now, because it wouldn't be appropriate to do it now, because it's not fair, because, you know, look, if I was a young professional, a doctor, a nurse, a guard, or whatever, I think I'd be leaving to go to Australia or better lands where they'd pay me and appreciate me a little bit more than they would here. So anyway, I want to move on. I'm kind of sticking to the same thing in a sense, you know, political promises. You're going to hear a lot of it, by the way, over the next few weeks. There's going to be kite flying before the budget. I think, you know, at this stage, either Irish people are stupid or we just don't understand how politics works. When it comes to an election, you will always have a good budget. The budget after an election, the first year of a government, you will always have a bad budget because they have 5 years to go and they know you'll forget about it. So whatever they give you in this budget, they most likely will take back in the next. So don't be fooled by it. You're going to have a lot of giveaways in the next budget, which is next, the end of next month. You're going to have a lot of giveaways because they want to buy votes. And if it's a good budget and everybody seems happy and the polling is good for the government, for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael particularly, they will call an election. They only have to give 30 days notice. Minister for Children, Rodrigo Gorman, has stated that he would like to see a once-off payment made to families who have delivered a newborn baby. Ah. The one-off payment would be to the value of 500 quid, which we're not disputing would be a good thing to have anybody with a newborn get. However, for someone that's been in government for years, why is the suggestion only coming now, just before an election? Is this kind of more PR lip service, or could you see this being delivered? And what about politicians' claims in the lead up to elections? Would you like to see their promises reviewed? Like the leaving cert, continuous assessment. In other words, when a politician says something, say Roger Gorman, I'm quoting him here, he says, it's a proposal we'll be bringing forward to the budgetary negotiations over the next number of weeks. We are very aware of the extra financial pressures that all new parents face on the arrival of a newborn baby. New costs, new baby seats, new sterilizer, all of the real basics, but quite expensive pieces of equipment. The idea is that alongside the initial child benefit payment of 140, there'd be a boost for that first payment. We're talking about quadrupling it. Why not, sir? Bringing it up to €560 for the first payment. Now, I know that doesn't sound like Rodrigo Gorman, by the way, at all. But, yeah, that's what he said. Now, you're going to have other politicians, not just Roderick, by the way. You'll have other politicians lie to you at the front door. I'm not going to say Roderick is lying. Maybe he will deliver it. But they lie to you at the front door. Oh, yeah, we're going to do something about immigration chaos. Oh, don't worry, missus. We'll get you that operation in 3 weeks. Oh, don't worry, mister. Yeah, there'll be nowhere more waiting lists than the HSE. Yes, we're going to bring down the cost of living. Yes, I promise you the energy bills will go down. And they'll say all of these things. I'm dealing with that directly myself. Yeah, I'm going to make sure in my first year of term of office, I'll make sure we didn't bring down the cost of diesel and petrol and all that. Yeah, that'll be done. No promise. Vote for me. All those kind of things, all those promises will be made by politicians. And you know, most of them are lies. So should they be responsible and, I suppose, made responsible for lying to you? Because they are invariably lying. So the only way to check that is they have a manifesto, and every political party has a manifesto, including independents. So they'll have a political manifesto, and, you know, of things that they will hope to achieve in the 5 years, be it housing or whatever it happens to be. And if they don't achieve it, maybe there should be an assessment once a year. If they don't achieve it, now don't get me wrong, sometimes there's reasons why you can't achieve something. You know, there's barriers in your way. But if you don't make an effort to achieve it, well then maybe, you know, you should be reprimanded in a sense of, sorry, you're out of a job. I mean, look at the gobshites we sent over to the in the European elections. You know, they weren't off the television for nearly 4 months before the elections, including me. They weren't off the internet, but I'm still on the radio. I'm still doing my podcast. I'm still talking to you every day. I'm still on Twitter. I'm still telling you the same thing I told you during the election. The rest of them, where are they? Where's Maria Walsh? Is she off shopping in Brussels? I mean, where are they? Where are they all now? They're not in the news anymore. They're not making a name for themselves. And this is what I said when I was trying to be elected. I would embarrass the Irish government. And RT took umbrage with me saying it. What do you mean you'd embarrass the Irish government? I would be a mouth. I would make sure that I would draw attention to Ireland and its misgivings, because I'd be constantly in the news mouthing out of me, because that's what I do. But there's no sign of them. Where's Barry Andrews? Eoin O'Riordan? Where are they? Why aren't they in the news? They've just been elected into a job that's worth 220 grand a year. Where are they? I mean, surely we should be getting value for money out of them. You know what I mean? Anyway. So should politicians be answerable to you, the public, in a way of assessment, continuous assessment, rather than just lying to you, barefaced, you know, and just loads of broken promises? Or is that too much to ask? Let me know what you think. The number is 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. Right, let me go to Martin, John and Susan, I think it is. Martin, hi, how are you?
I'm well tonight, Niall. Good evening.
Good.
First off, how's leg?
It's no better, Martin. It's still the same.
Yeah, I keep saying it to you, Niall. try acupuncture.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Yeah. I had a brief conversation with Connor there, and he said it would be appropriate just to quickly touch on, because I think there's a connection between what you're discussing now and what you discussed earlier on. As I said to you, when I was younger, I applied to be a guard. Unfortunately, my eyesight wasn't up to it. Now, even when I applied, I hadn't done my leaving cert, but when I found out that my eyesight wouldn't be up to it, when I'd spoken to a sergeant in my local community, and when I found out I couldn't be, okay, there was no point in going back to do my leaving cert and, you know, becoming fluent in Irish. But I think it comes down to how we value our guards. We have policing by consent in this country. It costs, I think, approximately, the last time I saw the figures, it was somewhere around 85 grand a year to keep a prisoner. I value a good guard, a good police officer, call them whatever you want, I don't care. I don't care what title you put on them. I value a good guard or a good police officer who is policing by consent and is protecting me, my family, my community, my constitution, far more than I value any prisoner. And the way I look at it is, it's a balance sheet. What return do I get by keeping somebody in prison for 85 grand a year? I keep going back to Bukele in El Salvador. You know, what he's done is he's put them into prisons that aren't, you know, they're not holiday homes by any means. Yeah. I know people would
and look at the crime rate. The crime rate has dropped dramatically.
Absolutely plummeted. You know, it's become one of the safest countries in the Western world, coming from a point where they had the highest murder rate in the Western world.
We'll get off in a teeny bit of a tangent. Martin, getting back to false promises. This is the time, you know, every 5 years, and I don't understand how people fall for it all the time, right? Every 5 years, right, people fall for this, the good budget before the election, and then the bad budget the first year after the election, right? But they fall for it every time. It's like, aren't they great? That increase in social welfare and the pension and all that. So they'll fall for it every single time. So how do we get away? How do do we make them answerable for the lies they'll tell us at the front door, although they don't do many front doors these days, but for the lies they'll tell us, you know, during their election campaign to get elected? How do we make them accountable for those lies?
Well, how I would do it, and how I've done it in the past, not that it makes much of a difference, but when any of them come to my door looking for a vote, I will tell them, I'll give you my vote. But if you're promising me something in my area, I want you to give me, not on some pamphlet, I want your signature on a document that I will type up, I'll send to your constituency office, and you sign it, send it back to me, I'll vote for you.
Because they are working for us. You know what I mean?
Let me say, I have the height of regard for some of our politicians.
Some of them are good.
Not by any means all of them or most of them, but some of them are very good. They're people who have, you know, they've worked hard, they've been backbenchers, they've been the whole lot. I mean, you know, we have a situation where, you know, Leo Varadkar went from a nobody being promoted in the press, the whole lot, bypassing backbenchers who'd been at the coalface for years, working. I was never a Fine Gael supporter by any means. But the principle I'm talking about is there were people there who were walking, doing exactly what the constituencies or the constituents in their area wanted done. And yet this guy appears out of nowhere, and within a few years, he's the Taoiseach running the country into the ground, as far as I'm concerned. We're doing no better with Simon Harris. We're doing no better with the entire cabinet, the entire government, actually, not just the cabinet. Are all the same. They will promise the sun, moon, and stars.
But it's so transparent. I mean, for Roger O'Gorman to come out today and say, I want to make a new payment of 560 quid, you know, to mothers who have a baby or parents who have a baby, a newborn baby, to cover the cost of their baby seat and their sterilizers. I mean, we all know that's an election promise. And maybe he will do it, but he's had 5 years to do it. Why didn't he do it before now? You know what I mean? It's just, It's so obvious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course it's obvious. And unfortunately, it gives me no pleasure to say this, but I think the Irish people are so gullible when it comes to electing our politicians.
I know.
So much kind of, it's still to this day very partisan insofar as, you know, Fine Gael versus Fianna Fáil, Labour, whomever. It's very partisan. People don't look at, to this day, most people don't look at the real issues. They're not
That's because the people who are affected by the real issues don't vote, Martin. And exactly. You know, this was highlighted during the European elections. When you see that the four parties all return to Europe again, and everywhere I went, people said to me, we want change. But then again, the areas I was going for, I targeted purposely areas that voted no in the referendum campaign, people who want to change, right? The problem is only 25 to 30% of those people actually go out and vote, or even probably register to vote. Whereas if you go to Dunleary, or, you know, or somewhere Ratgar, or, you know, Rathmines, or, you know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael territory, you got 75% of people come out and vote. So what I'm saying to you is, or well, at least 60% anyway, come out and vote. So that's the biggest problem. The people that want change don't actually go to the trouble of voting to get change.
Well, that comes back to something we've discussed several times now. I think it should be mandatory for people to vote.
Yeah, good plan. And based on my personal experience, I couldn't agree with you more. Stay there for a second, Martin. But John, as well, getting back to political promises, should there be, you know, a responsibility on politicians to deliver on those promises? Transparency.
Well, this outburst, as I would call it, by Roderick O'Gorman, like, I mean, the guy giving €500 for a child.
560, like,
When he's also shelling out money for to take the lives of children by abortion, it demands a hypocrite, right? Now, he's making this promise, right? Again, the election is only around the corner. It's more than likely he will be called. You watch this kind of stuff now, and there's going to be more and more goodies coming out all the time, right?
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Got an opinion?
Hello.
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, the best of Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Please don't text or call, as you will be charged.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Oh, then I'll mention the coachman's in while I'm at it, because they're the same. You could feed five people on a plate.
Yeah, huge, big plate. And then we got apple tart and ice cream, hot apple tart and ice cream.
Right.
And then we got, I got tea, and then Brendan.
Steve's hungry just thinking about this. Coffee. Yeah.
But the staff were absolutely excellent. Now, we've been there before, just going out on a Sunday afternoon. We say, go up and we'll book a table on the, Saturday. Go up on the Sunday because they're always very busy. And I have to say, there are excellent staff up there.
Yeah.
Very courteous, very polite.
See, Steve.
They come over. Is everything all right?
In fairness, Margaret, that's what they're paid
Will
to
you
do.
Stop being so pessimistic, running yeah. down your own...
Yeah. Well,
somebody's so negative, Steve.
Well, I mean, true or false, that's what they're paid to do.
But how many don't do that, Steve? That's the problem.
Upper scale restaurant.
Look, when you were in Las Vegas, are you all right, sir? You want anything else there? That's the same thing.
It was fake, but it was fake.
Margaret, I don't care if it's fake or not. Here's the thing, you know, if I go away to Florida, whatever, right, and you go into a shop, even for a packet of cigarettes, right? And they look at you, they'll make eye contact with you.
Have a nice day.
In Florida, it's like, you have a blessed day, sir. And I know it's fake, but it's lovely.
My local shop, where I go up, and if I run out of something, it's Centra here in Lusk, and the staff are excellent. How are you today, Margaret? you're feeling all right.
That's not the service I've got in local shops. When I go into them here in Dublin, for example, they're either chewing gum behind the